This is the Illinois Audio Reader. Thank you for joining me. My name is Cedric Richardson, and in this first half hour, I'll be bringing you news and articles from the Decatur Herald and Review. It's the Farm Progress Show, but different. You are not at Progress City, so there is no heat. You are not at Boone, Iowa, so there is no rain and mud. There's also no wood chips, no golf carts speeding by, no plastic tote bags full of product literature, no old friends to kibitz with, no war stories to share about the trials and tribulations of the crop season. Instead, you are in the comfort of your own home. Slippers, comfy chair, air conditioning, snacks. But that doesn't mean you can't enjoy some aspects of the annual showcase of the latest agriculture product advancements. Just like the rest of us, the Farm Progress folks had to come to grips with the coronavirus. After deciding to cancel this year's live show in Iowa, the team went to work making lemons into lemonade. Putting an estimated 500 exhibitors on the Farm Progress Show website, Matt Jungman and colleagues are serving up a virtual version of the event from September 15th through 17th with a significant change. Instead of tent companies building Progress City and thousands of exhibitors preparing their space to attract and welcome global visitors with a month of blood, sweat, and tears, the ball was in the court of Farm Progress. Jungman and his colleagues did all of the work organizing, recruiting help from across the Corn Belt, videotaping, and putting the best face on the 500 exhibitors as can be imagined. Static displays had to be prepared by exhibitors so viewers could make virtual visits. Field demonstrations had to be staged so viewers could evaluate equipment performance. Sorry, no corn stalks to kick around to check on grain loss, but there was no dust and dirt flying through living rooms and farm offices either, as there was in the fields being harvested and tilled. Instead of prying eyes and critical evaluation of equipment performance, viewers had to depend on the view obtained by GoPro cameras attached to the underbelly of shiny new equipment, washed and painted as if it had just come from the showroom of the nearby equipment dealer. With the ability to select among dozens of mini channels, the virtual visitors to the 2020 Farm Progress Show could cover the entire exhibit field in just a few minutes, selecting only what one wanted to see. One could watch tillage of a field, even before it was harvested, with the novel ability of virtual reality, and you didn't have to wear a pair of heavy, goofy goggles. Unfortunately, the opportunity to actually ride and drive the newest model of side-by-sides and four-wheelers will have to shift to the local dealership. That can be watched on a computer screen or an iPhone, but the bumps, acceleration, and handling don't come through very well on a 3x6-inch screen. Kudos should have been given to Jungman and Company for their yeoman efforts to make lemonade from COVID-19 lemons. They stepped up to the challenge, as other companies have done, to protect their clientele. Lemonade sounds good, but where's the 4-H food tent? Fields of Study. Holy Family School Young Entrepreneur produces produce. Young entrepreneur Howie Downs can talk at length about perennials, annuals, and various varieties of sunflowers. At the ripe old age of 7, Howie has been in the produce business for 2 years already. "Our name is Back in the Woods," said Howie, a second grader at Holy Family School, "because we have it back in the tree line." "He and his grandpa were driving," said his mother, Melissa, "and grandpa said, 'What are you going to call it?' and you said, well, it's back in the woods. The extensive garden is a group effort with Howie, his sister Ellie, 4, his parents Melissa and Aaron, and both sets of grandparents working together. His paternal grandparents live nearby in rural Mowica, and his mother's parents in the Chicago area, where Melissa Downs is from. They take their produce to a farmer's market in Frankfurt on weekends, and Howie is in charge of handling the money and making change for customers. We do it to raise money to buy things, Howie said, to buy important things and to raise money for college. There are 2 sections to the garden. The pumpkin patch is its own 2-acre area because pumpkins and the vines take a lot of room. Then there's an area devoted to a monarch way station with plants that the butterflies like. And the garden also includes peppers, tomatoes, sunflowers, cornflower, perennials and annuals, green beans, scarlet runner beans, and other vegetables. Grandpa lets Howie drive the garden tractor, and they experimented this year with planting 6 rows at a time after tilling the area. Melissa Downs said Howie hopes to save enough money to someday open his own business. A large part of the garden is the Monarch Way station, Melissa Downs said, but the pumpkin patch is what's taking all of our time at the moment. It's been a good year for pumpkins, she said, and Aaron and Howie do most of the harvesting while Melissa and Ellie clean up the pumpkins and bag them to take to the market stall. In past years, they just piled them up in bins, but COVID-19 restrictions mean they have to be individually bagged this year, and that's an extra time-consuming step. And then there's the bane of every farmer's existence, weeds. Howie does the weedings too, with help from his family. He begins looking at seed catalogs and planting his garden in the winter, choosing the varieties of plants and ordering the seeds. It's really fun and it's a good experience, he said. HSHS Medical Group is to offer free COVID-19 testing. Free drive-through COVID-19 testing will be provided by HSHS Medical Group. Register and schedule a testing appointment at hshsmgcovidtesting.org. Testing sites are in Decatur, Effingham, O'Fallon, and Springfield. Results will be accessible within 2 to 7 days. The tests are paid for through the federal COVID relief package. And in more related COVID-19 news, the Board of Health discusses stepping up enforcement of COVID-19 mandates in Macon County. The Macon County Health Department Board of Health got an update Tuesday about the enforcement efforts as they relate to businesses complying with state and local coronavirus mandates, with an eye towards stepping those efforts up. Throughout this time, we've worked very closely with the state's attorney's office and with the IDPH, with local law enforcement. We work with Illinois State Police, said Brandy Binky, the public health administrator, during Tuesday's virtual meeting. There's only so much we've been able to do, and we've done that to ensure we're doing our due diligence. The health department currently has a 3-step process after receiving complaints. The first step is an educational phone call. After the second complaint, the health department staff will make a visit to the business, and we provide education with that visit as well, said Binkley. On the third complaint, if the department has jurisdiction over the Macon County business, it may issue a cease and desist order. So far, they have not needed to take the third step. How the health department would enforce masks in businesses was discussed. They may be doing everything within their power to enforce people wearing masks, but once the people come in and take them off, they may not be in an appropriate situation to pull a food permit or issue a cease and desist order, said Binkley. But if it's a place that is outright not being compliant on purpose, they are putting people's lives at risk by not following any of these rules, and that might be a somewhat different situation. The board discussed the option of updating an ordinance, placing more businesses under its jurisdiction. We have a responsibility to the community, said Binkley. The health department is not the only entity able to enforce COVID precautions. They partner with law enforcement in following up on complaints out of their jurisdiction. I get both sides of it, board member Brent Jerger said, referring to people who think the restrictions are too relaxed or too strict. The process was confusing to the board as well. Originally, it was 6 feet or a mask. Now it's just about the mask, Jerger said. Minkley said the health department has drafted a mask ordinance similar to the one adopted by the city of Decatur. It has been sent to the state's attorney's office to review in case that's the direction the board would like to go, said Binkley. A COVID-19 enforcement support position also has been posted on the health department's website. We are looking to hire someone that can assist with taking those complaints, following up on them, and making those visits, said Binkley. In other business, the board got an update on the status of Decatur's only Kentucky Fried Chicken, located at 1310 East Pershing Road. The health department closed the local franchise to the public on September 10th for various health violations, including an overflowing dumpster with infestation of flies, heavy housefly activity, and excessive garbage in the storage area, a non-functional hand sink and mop sink. And according to the health department inspection report, the violations create a risk for foodborne illnesses. The restaurant also was closed by the health department on June 24th after a health inspection found imminent health hazards. Since this is the second closure for KFC in 12 months, the business license has been revoked. During the meeting, the board was shown images from previous inspections, including boxes filled with food waste and garbage, and sinks filled with cloudy standing water. Officials said the restaurant could be allowed to reopen if the health violations are addressed. However, if health issues persist, the board may be asked to vote on permanently closing the restaurant. It may come to where we need a hearing and get your intake, said Kathy Wade, Director of the Environmental Health and Emergency Preparedness. And looking over to police news, a dealer threatens and robs a Decatur customer after he refuses to buy pot, according to police. Police said a Decatur drug dealer robbed and threatened to beat a would-be customer to death with a baseball bat after the customer criticized the quality of the cannabis he was selling and refused to buy any. A sworn affidavit from Decatur police said the dealer, 21, robbed the 45-year-old customer of $40 after shoving the aluminum bat into his face around 9 p.m. August 24th and demanding, "Where's the money?" The affidavit said the dealer was found and arrested early Saturday. Writing in the affidavit, Officer Philip Ganley said the customer was left with abrasions from the force with which the bat was pushed into his face. He stated he feared the dealer would beat him severely with the baseball bat if he didn't give him any money, said Ganley. As the dealer was leaving, he turned back towards him. He pointed the bat at him and stated something similar to, "You better not call anyone about this. I'll come back here and end you." Ganley said the customer told police he had earlier invited the dealer to his apartment because he wanted to see what you got, as stated in a text message between the two men. Ganley said the customer was looking to buy a dime bag with a street value of $10, but refused when he saw what the dealer had to sell. The dealer was booked on a preliminary charge of armed robbery. All preliminary charges are subject to review by the state's attorney's office. A check of Macon County jail records Monday showed that the man remains in custody where he's been held with no bail available. Police say he has no previous Macon County robbery convictions. Police say he has a previous Macon County robbery conviction. And now some of the obituaries for today. Eldon Bandy, Eldon Jean Bandy, passed away on September the 11th, 2020. He was 91 years old. A celebration of his life will be held at the Blue Mound Civic Center on Thursday, September 17th 2020, from 5 o'clock to 7 o'clock p.m. Alice Jane Boylan, 77, of Hammond, Illinois, passed away on September 12, 2020, at Lincolnshire Place in Decatur. Memorials may be made to St. Philomena, Monticello, at 1301 North Market Street, Monticello, Illinois, 62856. A private services will be held. Condolences may be sent to the family at www.mackiewrightfuneralhome.com. Mary Dean. Mary Eileen Dean, 90, a former Jacksonville and Decatur resident, died on Friday, September the 11th, 2020, at Berry Community Care Center in Berry, Illinois. Private family services will be held with burial at Memorial Lawn Cemetery in Jacksonville. Memorials are suggested to St. Jude's Children's Research Hospital. The Buchanan and Cody Funeral Home in Jacksonville is in charge of arrangements. Condolences may be left at buchanancody.com. Esther Rogers. Esther M. Rogers, 85, of Decatur, Illinois, passed away at 5 o'clock a.m. Saturday, September the 12th, 2020, with her family by her side. A service to celebrate Esther's life will be held at 10 o'clock a.m. Friday, September 18th, 2020, at Dawson and Wickoff Funeral Home in Mount Zion. The burial will be in North Folk Cemetery in Decatur. The family will receive friends for visitation Thursday evening from 5 to 7 p.m. at the funeral home. In keeping with the state of Illinois pandemic requirements, social distancing and face coverings are recommended for all services. Messages of condolences may be shared with the family at DawsonWickup.com. Richard Satley. Richard Dick Lee Satley, 91, of Decatur, passed away on August the 25th, 2020, in San Ramon, California. A service to honor and celebrate Richard's life will be held at 10 a.m. on Saturday, September 19th, 2020, at Dawson and Wickoff Funeral Home in Mount Zion. Visitation will be from 5 to 7 p.m. on Friday evening. Richard will be laid to rest in Point Pleasant Cemetery. In lieu of flowers, the family suggests memorial contributions be directed to the Humanitarian Aid Fund, care of the Church of Jesus Christ and Latter-day Saints. And that is all of the obituaries for today. A Decatur teen finds his passion in photographing trains. Since he was 2 years old, Isaiah Bradford had an interest in trains and railroads. "I was either watching videos or going down to watch trains with my grandpa," he said. "It's always been my enjoyment." At 14 years old, his hobby is starting to get serious. With a camera in hand, Isaiah can often be found behind the Wabash Depot Antique Center, watching the trains go by. The Eisenhower High School freshman began taking photos only 8 months ago. "I started this little photography journey of mine," Isaiah said. "Ever since then, I've been snapping pictures of trains." Although the job of photographer is to get close to the subject, Isaiah takes the necessary precautions. He must remain no closer than 25 feet from the tracks. "I want to respect the engineers," he said. Trains are a favorite subject of the teens, but his talent has expanded in such a short time. Isaiah has taken portrait photos of families and individuals. I did my first wedding a few weeks ago, he said, and have been doing photography for the automotive world also. But his interests are still focused on trains. Isaiah's Instagram page has already begun to draw attention. He said the editor of Trains magazine recently reached out to him with an interest in publishing his work. Norfolk Southern Railroad Company has also contacted him. Taking photos of the majestic locomotives requires Isaiah to stay behind the scenes, but that's not enough for the teenager and his love of trains. Isaiah also volunteers at the Monticello Railway Museum. He has currently helped restore a train car. He's picking away at it, said his supervisor, Kent McClure. McClure began visiting the Railway Museum when he was 12 years old. Now at 58, he sees a similar spark in Isaiah. He reminds me a lot of me when I was that age, McClure said. The experiences have allowed Isaiah opportunities to get up close to the trains. I'm in training and learning how to operate a locomotive, Isaiah said. I drove a train for my first time last week. A career among trains is an option. I've always wanted to work for the railroad, Isaiah said, but I'm kind of leaning on the photography world. Photography experience for the teen has come by trial and error. I've been going out, taking pictures of trains or people, Isaiah said. I'm learning every time. Through meeting those in the railroad business, as well as fellow photographers, his interests have grown since he began his journey. Christian Clayton, 20, can be found along with Isaiah taking pictures of local locomotives. Each photographer has their own style. He uses more selective editing than me, Clayton said. I use a little more clarity on the photos. The two often visit with the experienced railroaders. They sit for hours in the lawn chairs, Isaiah said. I love talking to them, hearing their old railroad stories. Another train enthusiast has become a mentor to the teenager, and Mike Jacobs, 51, has also found an admiration in Isaiah. I'm just proud of him, Jacobs said. When the two met a year ago, Jacobs taught him what he knew about the railroad. The discussions have turned into life lessons. We'll see a train and make assumptions, Jacobs said. But I show him making assumptions without all the facts is just an assumption. The photography portion of the hobby has been a lesson for Jacobs as well. I'm learning from him too, he said. It's a two-way street. The two have studied train photos, noticing photographers focus on a certain engine, or they will only shoot in specific weather. The two will instead look for various sceneries or backdrops behind any train. And you don't go to work just on sunny days, Jacobs said. I tell him to tell a story when you take a picture through the train. Grab the person's eye. Decatur isn't Isaiah's only train stop. He also visits others throughout the state, including Chillicothe, Streator, Edelston, Springfield, Riverton, and Oakley. The various railway companies and what they deliver is an interest to him. The faster ones are also an interesting subject. Isaiah said he uses the hobby as train therapy. It's relaxing. It's therapeutic, he said. The motion of something that big, the sounds, and the sights. A Maine wedding is linked to the deaths of 7 people who didn't attend. A wedding in Maine is linked to 176 COVID-19 cases and the deaths of 7 people who didn't attend the celebration, demonstrating just how easily and quickly the virus can spread at social gatherings, public health experts say. As officials continue to push preventative measures such as wearing masks and practicing social distancing to keep infection rates low, they also have been vocal in warning against large gatherings. But Americans have continued to congregate, leading to outbreaks tied to a number of events, from Memorial Day and 4th of July celebrations to a massive motorcycle rally in Sturgis, South Dakota. The wedding held in Minnesocket on August 7th had about 65 guests in violation of the state's 50-person cap for indoor events, Maine CDC said. The event is linked to outbreaks that have unfolded at a nursing home and a jail, both more than 100 miles away from the wedding venue and among people who had only secondary or tertiary contact with an attendee. Residents at Maple Crest Rehabilitation and Living Center accounted for 39 cases tied to the wedding and 6 of the 7 deaths thus far, Maine CDC Director Dr. Niraj D. Shah said. The virus favors gatherings, Shah added. It does not distinguish between happy events like a wedding celebration or sad farewells like a funeral. Despite such somber warnings, about 1,500 people descended on a New Jersey boardwalk house featured in MTV's Jersey Shore Monday night, including in 8 arrests, according to the Seaside Heights Police. The event was organized by a group of YouTube pranksters, according to Seaside Heights Police Detective Steve Corman, and officials say they are now worried about how they would track possible infections among more than 1,000 people. Universities try to get ahead of the outbreaks. Outbreaks have been cropping up at colleges and universities, bedeviling administrators working to contain spread. More than 50,000 coronavirus cases have been reported at colleges and universities in all 50 states. Citing a significant rise in cases among students, Colorado University of Boulder will be moving to a 14-day quarantine period for students living within the city, according to its website. The University of Arizona is taking a similar tact, urging students to shelter in place until the end of the month after a large number of positive cases. The university reported 261 positive cases on Monday, according to the school's coronavirus dashboard. 2 students were expelled and 3 suspended at the University of Missouri for violating rules that require students who test positive to isolate and comply with social distancing. These students willfully put others at risk, and that is never acceptable. We will not let the actions of a few take away from the opportunity for in-person learning that more than 8,000 faculty and staff have worked so hard to accomplish for the more than 30,000 MU students, the university said in a statement on Tuesday. The Decatur Area Arts Council gets a new grand piano. The Decatur Area Arts Council will be christening a new grand piano at 10 o'clock a.m. Thursday, September the 17th in the Ann Lloyd Gallery at 125 North Water Street. The piano is a gift through a donation by Mary and Bob London. Pianist Michael Scherer will perform songs during the ceremony. Guests are required to wear masks. They are required to wear masks, not requited. For more information, email artsforall@decaturarts.org or call 217-423-3189. Thank you so much for joining me here on the Illinois Audio Reader. Again, my name is Cedric Richardson, and I hope you join us for more of our programming. It's been a pleasure. Until next time, goodbye.